Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Welcome to Centerpoint. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Anbar. In this show, we will discuss ways that we can journey to our own centers. This can help us access our inner resources to improve our physical abilities and health, our mental strength, our emotional well-being, and our spirituality. And today, I have the honor of presenting our guest, Mert. Thank you for joining us, Mert.
Hey, how's it going? Thank you for having me.
Things are going well. I'm only introducing Mert by his first name because he is a former patient, so for confidentiality purposes, we'll use his first name. Let me tell you a little bit about him. He is a third-year undergraduate at Arizona State University. He's studying with Barrett, the Honors College, and he is keen on learning about psychology, philosophy, and specifically where the two intersect. Over the past few weeks, he's been actually shadowing me at Centerpoint Medicine in order to learn more about how patients can receive counseling, and including through hypnosis and accessing the subconscious. But I talked to you earlier about this, Bert, and I was hoping we could go back in time 3 or 4 years around the time we first met. And if you said you'd be willing to talk about what you were dealing with it back at that time, and hopefully you can shed light for us how you were thinking as a 16, 17-year-old about life in general. So, over to you.
So, to give a bit of context, it was during the height of COVID, so the pandemic had everyone in their rooms basically for weeks or months without really any cutoff, and I was already having questions regarding to existential topics, like why are we here, what's it all mean, and it kind of culminated in, I guess, this internal storm where I ended up lashing out at myself, essentially, and that set me on a journey where I ended up, you know, coming to Centerpoint and meeting Dr. Anbar, and yeah.
Do you remember what your thought process, how did you, you said you lashed out at yourself, but what were you upset with?
Well, it led to self-harm, but it started with these questions of what's it all going to mean in 1,000 years, or why am I ever doing anything? Like, just really fundamental questions that, you know, a 16, 17-year-old shouldn't have the answers to anyways, but...
Right. I think some 60-year-olds don't have answer either. So those are the big life questions. What I remember specifically from you is that you said to me, I figured out I can't be the best at any one thing, so what's the point? You remember that?
Yeah, I remember that as well, because the one thing I did feel like had some meaning was to be the best, because that had some clear definition. But even... You realize even that is obviously a false way of thinking, too. But, yes, I do remember that.
So, again, trying to dive into your mind from 3 or 4 years ago, why do you think the questions popped up? Do you think that kids think about these things in general and you took it deeply? Or how do you self-analyze? What happened?
Well, I feel like, personally, I've always been a kid who... was insecure about how I was perceived by other people. And I played tennis growing up, for example. I would always play better when people were watching me because I would play for them. and I would perform worse when I was having a match and nobody else was watching. But that kind of evolved into questioning myself, like, who do I perceive myself as and who am I to me? Forget other people. And I took that wrong turn of, you know, I'm not the best at anything. It's all meaningless. There's no use in anything. But, yeah, I figured it was a wrong turn. Thank goodness. So here we are now.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. I think a lot of kids define themselves by how others view them. And the problem with that, of course, is, well, in your case, if others weren't viewing them, you lost definition, as I understand it. But other people, if people get mad at them or people think poorly of them, then they fall to pieces because they don't have a self-definition. How do you think you grew from that? Because you have a better sense of self now. What happened to allow you to progress forward?
Well, how it used to be was I would make myself feel better by saying, oh, if this person is more athletic than me or academically better than me or athletically, you know, at least I'm better than him in this other way. You know, at least I can play the drums better or I can play tennis better or something. And at some point throughout all of those comparisons with possibly hundreds of thousands of people I've met and seen in my daily life, I've come to realize that everybody's better at something and everybody's worse at something. So the sense of self kind of came from realizing that there is none in the first place, if that makes sense. Instead of staking my identity on things I do, I realize that it's all of them and none of them. So that's been helping me determine who I am.
Interesting. So when I first met you and you had decided you were worthless because you could not be the best at anything, what could have been said to you? Or if you're going to, I know you're interested in going to psychology as a profession, what would you counsel a 17-year-old with that kind of mindset? What would you say?
I do ask myself that question all the time as well. I think I would invite him into my thought process by asking them leading questions such as what it means for someone to be better at something and where your identity resides so that them being better affects your own identity. And I'm sure if I was asked that question in probably a more professional manner or a more long-winded manner, I would have wrestled with that thought and maybe I would have been better quicker, but who knows? I mean, I think for those types of questions, the conversation determines what you're supposed to say.
I think that's a very good answer because you need to go where the patient is at. So you would go to the existential question. What do you recall we did together that helped you?
I think what's helped me more than anything is realizing that there are other people who have thought this and deal with this, and, you know, there is a life at the other side of this youth ordeal. Realizing that with our sessions, through our conversations, has helped me the most. And I also often think about the hypnosis we did, if I might mention that.
Sure.
And if you remember the Hotel California song, I do often think about what that means because I feel like it does mean different things at different points in life.
So tell us more with the Hotel California song. I know it, but tell the audience.
Well, how Dr. Ranbar communicated with my subconscious was my arm.
Yeah.
It was by testing my arm strength, where a resistance to a pull meant yes and no resistance meant no. And through a conversation with my subconscious, we settled on listening to Hotel California because one of the lyrics would reflect how my subconscious feels or what advice they would give to me. And was it you can check out anytime, but you may never leave. I think that was the lyric. That's what I think about all the time, because that's what my subconscious said yes to, and I think about what it means to never leave.
And what does that mean to you?
Like I said, I think I like to think of it as different things at different times. Like, you may check out, but you'll never leave. Like, things are, like, some things are permanent and some things are temporary. Like, for example, if a bad thing happens, I can think of it like, this will pass. Or if a good thing comes to an end, it's like, okay, they've checked out, you know, but they'll never leave. That's kind of how I feel. But I've been able to modify it, I guess, into a tool now that I think about it. Like a Swiss Army knife.
You know, I should spend a moment talking about how your subconscious operated. So when I talk to a subconscious of a patient, I will ask open-ended question. And the question I asked Mert's subconscious was a variation of, what advice do you have for him? And then Mert, as I recall, said, I'm hearing this song, Hotel California, which I had not heard of. And but I've seen this with other patients. So when your subconscious gives you something, right, your subconscious gives you something, you follow up. So, okay, let's listen to this song. And that's when, as we listened, his subconscious said, oh, that's the line that he needs to learn. But what's fascinating is that the subconscious can communicate in this kind of way, tell you a song to listen to that's relevant, or it'll say, look at this artwork that's relevant. It's not always, here's your advice. And, you know, I'm always so impressed by people's inner selves is how they communicate. When you got that message, how did you react to it at that time?
Well, at the time, I knew I had to think about it, if I'm being honest. I knew I didn't know what it meant, but I knew that's what it was pointing to.
I guess I had
more questions, I guess, by then.
Well, I think that was the point. I think your subconscious wanted you to think more, which is what you did, and then you started getting
better. And still
do, right? Yeah. So you had this personal experience. You had an existential crisis of sorts. You started waking yourself out by learning about yourself, about how you're being asked provoking questions by your subconscious, by our conversations, and over time, I don't think it took that long. Over several months, you got out of that sort of mindset.
Right, right.
And then the question is, you know, I don't think, from my perspective, I could have helped you hurry it along. You have to let the person go at their own pace, and sometimes it can be like an epiphany, and other times it can take years. Fortunately, it didn't take years with you. But then you got out of the mindset and started saying, there might be some value to life. And so when you started coming out of the woods, what did you think about? What were you looking forward to in life at that point?
I came to realizations about how important it is to, I guess, have a good understanding about life and whatnot, because I kind of, I'm not sure how I would explain this. If our identity is anything, I like to think that it's our understanding. So once you realize you can change or ideally improve your understanding, you realize that you can easily improve yourself because it's the same thing. So that realization gave me a way to be better in my head. And that way, I guess realizing it made me want to be better. It did make me want to be better, but I guess there was some desire to want to be better in the first place, you know, for the whole process to happen.
Right. And then it's fascinating that the course of study you've picked in college, because isn't it a continuation of finding out about yourself, both through psychology and philosophy and the combination. So tell us how you decided to go into those two fields.
So I always had a future of with psychology in my mind. I didn't know at the time if I wanted to be a therapist or like a business psychologist or some type of consultant, but I knew it was psychology. And as I, you know, went through the courses, I had this honors philosophy class, and it's one of my favorite professors there. Shout out Dr. Ramsey. And his lectures really inspired something in me where I realized whatever I'm searching for in psychology, I can look for it using philosophy. So I started to really get into philosophy so I could understand psychology better. That was the initial project, but what I ended up realizing is that I could use psychology to look deeper into philosophy as well. So I realized that they play off of each other very nicely. And I mean, obviously I'm not the first to realize this, but I had this epiphany within myself, and I think it's something I would like to pursue for the rest of my life, how they play together.
Can you give us like a specific example of a psychological question that you examined philosophically, and then I'm going to ask you the opposite. So, like, what kind of issue in psychology would you examine philosophically, and how would philosophy inform your looking at it?
So, I would look at a lot of social psychology in philosophic ways, to be honest. I took this class for social psychology, and what I realized was, like, there's a lot of parallels between what's observed in social psychology and, for example, what the Greeks write about etiquette. And it's interesting that both disciplines have came to similar realizations, and how they come to those realizations is valuable for different reasons. So I would give social psychology as that example.
So, like, you're talking about a specific social psychology theory, for example, how maybe people operate in groups, and then the philosophy comments on it. Do you think... Go ahead.
Sorry, please.
Do you think that philosophy evolved into psychology? Because in Greek times, there was no psychology. Psychology is a fairly modern concept. Do you think the philosophers or psychologists of old?
I mean, the short answer is I agree, and yes. But I think in our philosophy class, we looked at a lot of Sigmund Freud to understand how this question came to fruition, actually, like how psychology was derived from philosophy and whatnot, and Freud really emphasizes the importance of philosophic thought in his books about what to do as a therapist or a counselor. So, I think...
So can you give us an example of that, how he did that?
Oh, well, I would have to read On Dreams again, but... Not at the moment. I don't have quotations. I'm sorry.
No worries. Quotations. I'm just trying to get the concept. So Freud, for example, thought that dreams are the royal road to the subconscious or the unconscious, I think as he called it, and that you can sort of gain a better self-understanding with that. So how would a philosopher look at the same observation? What would I learn from a philosophical standpoint about understanding how dreams may operate?
So both a philosopher and a psychologist would have to do with interpretation. And the specific branch of philosophy that deals with understanding and interpretation, I think, which is the closest to what's interesting to me in psychology, is called hermeneutics, which is, it literally means like the study of understanding. And what Freud says about dreams, how... He, well, not about dreams, too. He also says about poems that They're the elegant ambassador of the id. Like, they say what the id wants without it being monitored and censored and edited by the subconscious. So the psychologists realize what philosophers did in that dreams, poems, art, anything that does with human interpretation has a lot of value in being talked about and being explored. So Freud made that realization with dreams, what philosophers make with poems, I suppose.
When you studied philosophy, have you said, oh, this, I think you said this earlier, but this applies to my psychological learning, or maybe I should import this philosophical idea into putting it to therapy. Did you have such experiences?
Right. Yeah, of course I did. So, as I said before, for example, how I see my identity as my understanding, as opposed to achievements or my name or my face, etc., just seeing it as my understanding is a psychological result that I reap, but it's a philosophic foundation that my understanding is me.
This is fascinating, that the recognition that psychology is maybe the child of philosophy is, I have never thought of it that way, but it actually makes a lot of sense as we're talking about it. But when we come back, I want to explore more about your understanding of philosophy. You're my philosophy expert. I had never studied philosophy formally other than reading in a couple of classes, in my humanities classes. So I want to hear more about how philosophy would apply to the work that we've done and I do with my patients. We'll be right back after these messages. This is CenterPoint with Dr. Ron Unbar.
Coming attraction, Life Guide for Teens, Harnessing Your Inner Power to Be Healthy, Happy, and Confident. A new book by Dr. Ron Unbar to be published early 2025. Dr. Ambar's renowned counseling practice, CenterPoint Medicine, doesn't fix teens who are struggling. They give them the tools to heal themselves and support them while that healing happens. Life Guide for Teens will share Dr. Ambar's tools for self-empowerment and give teens hundreds of tips to choose from to help themselves heal. The book will be available from Amazon and wherever fine books are sold.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Healing and changing children's lives with hypnosis is very real and very possible. Dr. Ron Ambar's new book, Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis, provides you meaningful stories and expert explanations to show you not only the process of hypnosis, but its many benefits for overall wellness. Whether a parent, practitioner, or medical doctor, this book opens the way to complete connection, so necessary for healing. Get your copy of Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis at Amazon.com or visit DrAnbar.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Dr. Ron Unbar and his dedicated team of healthcare providers offer unique health services to help patients overcome psychological roadblocks or use the power of their minds to improve their overall health and well-being. At CenterPoint Medicine, with services in La Jolla, California and Syracuse, New York, this caring staff are waiting just to help you. Find out more at CenterPointMedicine.com. Can't wait? Make your appointment now. Call 858-201-4001. That's 858-201-4001.
Audiobooks gives you instant access to over 50,000 of the bestsellers and hottest book titles in romance, mystery, fiction, and many other genres. Just visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on Audiobooks to get started.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
If you are a medical or licensed healthcare professional or just anyone looking for a qualified hypnosis practitioner, then go on over to ASCH.net. That's the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis. At ASCH.net, you can get certified, attend workshops, and even find a hypnosis practitioner or consultant. ASCH provides an opportunity to learn and interact with colleagues. So whether you're a professional wanting to learn hypnosis or a patient wanting help with a problem, visit ASCH.net now.
More exhilarating talk. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to Center Point. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Anbar. Our special guest is Mert, who is a third-year undergraduate at Arizona State University studying psychology and philosophy, and we're talking about the overlap between the fields. And I'm wondering, so we talked earlier about Freud and his concept of id and how it's expressed through poetry and dreams. I want to spend a few moments describing how I differ from Freud, because I want Mert for us to discuss, if you would, how we would look philosophically at the work I do. So first of all, the subconscious, when I first started encountering the subconscious and interacting with it directly, as I taught you to do, which is either through having it indicate yes or no, with muscle strength testing, or some patients, their subconscious can talk directly to me verbally or in typing. So when I first started interacting with the subconscious, I looked for the id and the superego, and I couldn't find them. I couldn't not find a part that would say, oh, I think like the id type of thing, or I think primitively. So I sort of dropped that, and then as you experienced with me, your subconscious, as an example, brought up Hotel California and communicated in a really different way. And when you ask open-ended questions of the subconscious, you get a lot of varied answers. So sometimes you get verbal answers. As I mentioned earlier, sometimes you get pictures, imagery, feelings, all sorts of ways that the subconscious can communicate. So as we're talking about philosophy, and I'm wondering how you look at, like, when your subconscious told us, listen to this song and pick out this line, do you think it wanted you, I guess I'm thinking as I'm talking that it wanted you to start thinking differently, and was there a philosophical principle behind that?
Well, if we apply philosophical understanding, or at least as far as I understand it, to my specific case, I mean, I'm on board with essentially everything you said, that my subconscious, this other, or silently processing, let's say, entity is giving me advice and telling me what to think about. And yeah, there's absolutely a philosophic basis for that as well, where you do this in art, where your subconscious is trying to communicate something, and what comes out on the other end is art. Or with you try to initiate that communication with the subconscious, and what comes out is, for example, that lyric from Hotel California. But instead of a painting, what you made me do is, you know, make my arm, pull on my arm and get that lyric.
That's
how I viewed it.
Yeah. I'm wondering, do you know, when we're talking philosophy, are we talking Greek philosophy, or are we talking, world philosophy? I don't know much about the field.
Well, when I use the word philosophy, I literally mean the love or the pursuit of wisdom. So unless I refer to a specific time period or study of philosophy, I'll specify that. But philosophy to me is just the pursuit of wisdom or the love of it.
So in that pursuit, do they consider the subconscious? Do they talk about having different parts, or is it one unified person and how they negotiate through life?
I think what is interesting about the different disciplines of philosophy, or philosophy in general, is that they do understand the subconscious, but different disciplines call it different things. For example, I will hear the psyche, I will hear the soul, the heart, the fire. These things, these words that are used in philosophy, tend to describe something internal, like a subconscious.
So, like, when you hear the word soul in philosophy, what is it talking about?
When I think of the word soul, to me, it's It's something I think about often, actually. I appreciate that you asked me this question. Your soul, I feel as though when you think about it, you know, first of all, it's not something you can grab hold to and look at. We know that. And as I laid out before, like, compared to your identity, I don't think it's related to your name or your face either. I think your soul, quote unquote, is a series of happenings. Like, I think of it like a bird covering itself with long feathers. Like, think of those feathers as experiences, people's ideas, events. And if you try to strip those happenings to find out what a soul is, well, you've missed the point, because there is no bird in reality. You strip the feathers and that's all there was. So the soul itself is just a series of happenings. Trying to determine what it is beyond your experiences is, I think, missing the point. Because you've stripped it of what it makes it, the soul.
Interesting. So what I'm hearing you saying is that the soul is defined by external events. Is that not, are you saying that?
Could you repeat that, please?
Are you saying to me that the soul is defined by external events?
I think defined is a tricky word, but yeah, by experiences, happenings, yes.
I think I want to challenge you on that, or think more on that, because believe me, for example, we started off this conversation as a teenager. You were looking for external affirmation of who you were, and it seems to me your definition of soul is similar. It's like your experiences define the soul. And I guess the way I think about things, and I could be completely wrong, is that part of becoming aware of who you are is defining the internal you. And that's where I would place the soul, is internally I suppose it could be changed by external experiences or learned from them, but I have this idea that the soul is something internal that exists maybe even before you live. I mean, it's something that maybe is adorned during life, but there's certainly something there to start with, and something that perhaps will exist after you die. But do you believe in the permanence of soul? Maybe not.
I took a religion class for my philosophy credit, but I have to say I do disagree with the permanence of souls as of now. I would be open to arguments, obviously, but I would like to hear more, but I do disagree.
Interesting. So I would tell you that from my life experiences, I'm just an N-of-1, that the older I've gotten, the more I've become convinced of a permanence of soul. The reason for that is that my experiences have colored my understanding of how things work. You talked earlier about the experiences serving to cover the soul, like feathers. But I think there is an itis, a center to it all. And let's explore this further after the break. This is Center Point with Dr. Ron Anbar.
Make-A-Wish has been granting life-changing wishes for children and families for over 40 years. A wish is something that gives children the opportunity to look outside their illness and restore a sense of childhood back to the child. With the help of donors and more than 43,000 worldwide volunteers, Make-A-Wish has collectively granted more than 520,000 wishes worldwide. Dr. Anbar has referred many patients to Make-A-Wish. To make a donation, go to worldwish.org. That's worldwish.org.
HealthyLife.net, the positive radio network.
Healing and changing children's lives with hypnosis is very real and very possible. Dr. Ron Anbar's new book, Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis, provides you meaningful stories and expert explanations to show you not only the process of hypnosis, but its many benefits for overall wellness. Whether a parent, practitioner, or medical doctor, this book opens the way to complete connection, so necessary for healing. Get your copy of Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis. at Amazon.com or visit dranbar.com.
Reach your health and fitness goals. Whether you want to lose weight, learn to dance, build muscle, or just live healthy, Beachbody gives you unlimited access to the nation's most popular fitness and weight loss solutions. Visit our advertiser page and click on Beachbody now.
Dr. Ron Ambar and his dedicated team of healthcare providers offer unique health services to help patients overcome psychological roadblocks or use the power of their minds to improve their overall health and well-being. At Centerpoint Medicine with services in La Jolla, California and Syracuse, New York, this caring staff are waiting just to help you. Find out more at centerpointmedicine.com. Can't wait? Make your appointment now. Call 858-201-4001. That's 858-201-4001.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Coming attraction, life guide for teens, harnessing your inner power to be healthy, happy, and confident. A new book by Dr. Ron Ambar to be published early 2025. Dr. Ambar's renowned counseling practice, Centerpoint Medicine, doesn't fix teens who are struggling. They give them the tools to heal themselves and support them while that healing happens. Life Guide for Teens will share Dr. Ambar's tools for self-empowerment and give teens hundreds of tips to choose from to help themselves heal. The book will be available from Amazon and wherever fine books are sold.
All positive talk with a mature edge. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to Center Point. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Ambar. Our special guest is Mert. We are discussing philosophy and psychology. And right now we're talking about the nature of soul. Is it permanent? Is it transient? So, Mert, I think you had a comment about my idea that as I've gotten older and had more experiences, I have more of a sense of permanence of soul. How do you react to that?
I think I would like to explore the word permanent because, to me, the soul, as how I've defined it, and to me as how you've defined it, still exists within my understanding, or perhaps we can say a collective understanding. And that, just because it exists in our understanding, you know, does not make it any less real. According to me, my identity resides in my understanding, or it is my understanding, and my identity is certainly real, I feel as though. So I would like to say, as long as the concept of a soul exists in some collective understanding, then a soul is. Like, it does exist. But to call it permanent, I think, would be to say that a soul would be going past that collective understanding. Like, when the Earth, when our planet inevitably dies and our solar system crumbles, that there will still be our souls flying out in space that will be permanent. I'm not so sure.
Interesting.
What do you think? I would like them to be in our understanding. I mean, is there a space they could be in? Besides that,
some religions, God is always existing, always is, and there's no time, so it just is. And I've developed the concept that souls are part of that. But let me share a little bit of why I think there's a permanence of soul. I've encountered patients whose subconscious has shared information that I do not think the patient had access to. When I get that kind of experience, I have to ask, well, where is that coming from? And one of the easiest explanations is from a different plane of existence. People argue, well, the patient might have been exposed to whatever information is given and may not have been aware of it, and the subconscious is stating that. And while I acknowledge that's a possibility, that the patients I've encountered, some of them have come up with new information. Like one patient showed me in Hebrew a message from my deceased father, which the patient didn't speak Hebrew, the patient never studied it, and certainly didn't read the message anywhere. So where does that come from? Is that kind of question I have. And I've had a number of these experiences that make you say, how did this happen?
Well, what sounds like happened is the soul has carried through, is what you're proposing? Is that a good way to put it? Because it knows things that this kid should not, but your explanation is that the soul has carried through. Well, I would say that this, you know, I don't think it disagrees with what I propose about the soul's existing in a common understanding. It just means that it's the common understanding has existed long enough for these souls to carry through. And what you say about the plane of existence, I think it can be true on my side as well, because as long as we can make a place for it in our collective understanding, then that plane of existence is true. Or, you know, the souls can exist there. As to the specific case of how, you know, the kid, how did he communicate Hebrew? He wrote it down, you said?
He saw it in his mind, and he could either, he wrote it down sometimes, and sometimes he identified in letter charts. I would point, he'd point to letters he was seeing.
Well then, I'd like to respond with, this is why I intern with you, and I would like to see that happen as well. But I wouldn't be able to explain it.
Because I'm not the only one to report such things. There, if you read world literature, there's stories like this. It's just that people say, yeah, right. But I believe there's a truth to that. Where did you get the idea that collective understanding defines souls? Where does that idea come from?
Not that it specifically defines the soul, but that it could define anything. And the soul is, at the end of the day, a word we're using, so the concept that it refers to has a place in our collective understanding. And I'm referring to that place in our collective understanding when I make arguments referring to it.
But you're seeming to imply that if, like, there weren't, again, I might be misstating, but if there weren't people to understand, then the soul wouldn't be or wouldn't exist. Is that what you're saying?
Correct. I think our understanding, or we, using our understanding, we have built these words that make us, like, our understanding is in a circular reality, is in a circle with reality.
Huh. Well, I'm familiar with the concept, and we've discussed on this show before, that, for example, colors only exist in our minds, that there are no colors in the universe, that the color is the mind taking a light particle at a certain wavelength and making it red or blue or whatever, in our minds, not out there. Are we saying the same thing about soul, in a way?
I think, as opposed to colors, I think this argument is much more suited for topics like the soul or the subconscious or consciousness in general. The intangible things, I think, are more reserved for this method of argument or this perspective, where our understanding is much more involved than empirical facts.
So,
like, what color something is.
Right. But it's still in our minds. So, in other words, that's what echoed to me. So if we weren't around, there would be no colors. And you're saying if we weren't around, there'd be no soul. It's the same kind of... So it's, the soul in your version is more local. It, I mean, I guess it's within each of our minds. But if we didn't have the minds, then there wouldn't be soul, is what you said. So that's a really interesting concept. It doesn't explain how observations that souls seem to move lives, perhaps. How do you explain?
Right. I wouldn't be able to explain it, and I would like to keep interning with you for that.
Yeah. We talked previously on this show about savants, the people who suddenly develop an unusual ability, an extraordinary ability, like musical or math or art, work or suddenly know a language you never heard before. How does that fit into your model of our understanding? I don't know if it would fit well.
Well, I'm sure there's an argument to make throughout their daily life. Their subconscious has somehow processed that way of doing things, even though their aware mind wouldn't even report it. Perhaps their subconscious could have processed it. I'm not sure about the literature on things like that happening, but...
Well,
yeah, that's something like that could happen.
There isn't much literature on it. I reviewed it recently. maybe that's where you need to, maybe you'll study it in the future and create the literature. Because I think we really are discussing, in a way, even though philosophy is thousands of years old, the way we're thinking about it now is, I think, different than 2,000, 3,000 years ago.
And of course, supplemented with psychological knowledge as well.
Right. There's much to be learned still. Well, this is fascinating. We'll be right back after these messages. This is Centerpoint with Dr. Ron Anbar.
More than 30,000 children and adults of every race and ethnic group in the U.S. have cystic fibrosis. Cystic fibrosis is a disease causing long-lasting lung infections, limiting the ability to breathe over time. Dr. Anbar participated in research that helped advance survival of cystic fibrosis patients by more than 20 years. He encourages you to donate to the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation to help find a cure. It's easy to donate. Go to cff.org. That's cff.org.
HealthyLife.net, the positive radio network.
If you are a medical or licensed healthcare professional or just anyone looking for a qualified hypnosis practitioner, then go on over to ASCH.net. That's the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis. At ASCH.net, you can get certified, attend workshops, and even find a hypnosis practitioner or consultant. ASCH provides an opportunity to learn and interact with colleagues. So whether you're a professional wanting to learn hypnosis or a patient wanting help with a problem, visit ASCH.net now.
Constant Contact and your small business make a perfect fit for marketing. They give you what you need to succeed. Fast and easy email marketing at your fingertips. Visit the HealthyLife.net advertiser page and click on Constant Contact to start your marketing.
Healing and changing children's lives with hypnosis is very real and very possible. Dr. Ron Anbar's new book, Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis, provides you meaningful stories and expert explanations to show you not only the process of hypnosis, but its many benefits for overall wellness. Whether a parent, practitioner, or medical doctor, this book opens the way to complete connection, so necessary for healing. Get your copy of Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis at Amazon.com. or visit dranbar.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Dr. Ron Anbar and his dedicated team of healthcare providers offer unique health services to help patients overcome psychological roadblocks or use the power of their minds to improve their overall health and well-being. At Centerpoint Medicine, with services in La Jolla, California, and Syracuse, New York, this caring staff are waiting just to help you. Find out more at centerpointmedicine.com. Can't wait? Make your appointment now. Call 858-201-4001. That's 858-201-4001.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to Centerpoint. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Anbar. A special guest is Mert, who's sharing his knowledge of philosophy. We've been talking about the soul and whether it's permanent or not, whether it just exists in people's understanding and minds. I guess part of philosophy, you never know for sure until you get there, maybe, and maybe not even then.
That's why it will remain a pursuit.
I'm wondering, in this last segment, I often ask our guests to give three tips based on their experiences to teenagers, to young adults. Do you have any tips based on your experience of how people could approach existential questions in a constructive way as opposed to a nihilistic way, because we want to affirm life? That's a value, isn't it? Life.
Right.
All right. I think life is important. So what would you say to a confused teenager? What tips would you give?
So, first of all, I'll address existentialism. If, and this is me speaking to the hypothetical teenager, if you do come to the realization that it's all meaningless and nothing matters, you know, congratulations, you're further along than some people or maybe most people your age, and what's important isn't to realize that, but to shape your understanding in a way that, you know, promotes life for you, like Dr. Anbar said, and has room for that understanding. So how I do it is to say, oh, it's meaningless. There are no rules. Cool. Then humanity can just do its thing, and we can all be happy. I like thinking about it as a freeing way, as a freeing sense, rather than a meaningless sense. I think it opens the door for a lot more fun if you consider it. Another tip that I would give you, it was three, right?
Yes.
The second one, I suppose, would be to, in your mind, and this is, again, me speaking to them, take a step back from your feelings and try to look at how you feel about your feelings. And then once you've done that, or if you already do that and you feel bad about that, take a second step back and look at how you felt towards your feeling of your feelings. And, you know, for me it took two steps. It could take more steps for more people, but I think, or I hope you'll come to the realization that you are not your feelings, you are not your particular feelings in a moment at a being in time. You know, you are constantly living and changing as a person. You know, new happenings are constantly being attached to your soul. New feathers are constantly growing or being plucked. Or as life happens, you change. So don't stake your identity on, for example, a guilt of a feeling you had or anything else like that. And a third tip, I would say get into philosophy if you're having these questions. I promise you, people have thought these way before you. They will keep thinking on it way after you. Please read other people's thoughts, see what conclusions they made. I promise you'll find something that helps you. There's so many good words out there.
Well, that's really helpful.
Those are the three I would give.
I will send people to the recording of this program when they have the existential questions to get you tips.
Right.
As you're describing, the second tip was take a step back, look at your feelings, and then your feelings about your feelings. First, I wanted to call that the matrix way of thinking. I also was thinking about how when you say take a step back and examine your feelings, what part of the person you're talking to? You're not talking to their mind. Who is, when you say take a step back, who's supposed to take the step back? The soul?
I am talking to the perspective they have in their thoughts, I would say, because, I mean, through the patients I've met through you, I've come to realize that people's minds don't all, I guess, look the same to them. So I would say whatever your method of thinking is, try to make it in a way that your feelings of that moment are in perspective of something, or you've placed them in a context where you sort of see yourself or those feelings as a character in that time, and you analyze that character, and then you look at your analysis of it and so on. That's, I guess, how I would further explain taking a step back.
Yeah. Another way of doing that is to say, let's say your name is Mert, you say, what does Mert think about this? Talk about yourself in the third person, and it gives you a different perspective. It can also extend that to what does, you know, what would Plato say about it? And imagine what might be said if you studied that philosopher, what somebody else would say. Again, giving you a different perspective. And how does giving yourself different perspective help you move along? What do you think that does?
Well, it's there's this philosophy joke that my professor told me. I think it was in one of our first lectures. But basically, a fire marshal goes into a philosophy lecture room and asks how many people there are, and there's like 25, maybe 20 people in there, and the teacher says like hundreds, because what he means is that all the 25 other people have brought so many different perspectives with them that they've brought those people with them as well, so that when he reports it to the fire marshal, there's hundreds. So what I like to think about is when you gain those perspectives, like when I try to gain yours or when I try to gain my professor's, I could then imagine a conversation with you or with him or with a friend or with a family member that, you know, what would they say? What advice would they give if I told what just happened to them? What would they say to me? That is something that I think about a lot, and I think that happens because you put an effort into gaining their perspective.
Right, and I think it's beautifully said that the therapy I offer people, talk to your subconscious, it also gives a different perspective.
Right, and right.
And if you want to be really clever, you can ask your subconscious to represent different perspectives. You could even imagine a boardroom with a bunch of famous people sitting around the room giving advice, from Albert Einstein to Jesus,
exactly,
to Moses, I don't know, whatever you want around your table, and get their perspectives. The people have actually done that as a way of becoming more creative or developing understanding.
It's a beautiful concept created by our human understanding. Truly wonderful.
Yeah. So I think that what I will need to chew over is your idea of the impermanence of soul versus my idea. You know, I think of the soul as our bodies and minds being avatars for our souls. That's my current idea. So we drive it for a while, and then the body dies, mind dies, but the soul goes on and finds another avatar. Where did I get that concept? Well, I guess I saw the movie Avatar. But the world makes more sense to me with permanence of soul, but I guess as I move forward, I will ask myself, thanks to our discussion today, whether this could just be an idea that we all have, which defines the soul. So I'll keep in mind. See, you've given me food for thought, for which I really thank you, Mert, and I assume I've done the same for you.
Right, right. I'm thinking about, for example, if we were to think in terms of science, energy isn't something that can be, you know, obliterated out of existence. It transfers, it changes, it goes somewhere. So if the soul was a form of energy, you could argue that they can never be destroyed. So I think that's interesting. And I think on the other side, I would like to ask what the permanence of a soul looks like or even means without human understanding or any understanding to perceive it. I think that's a more philosophic question to wonder, but then again, if the soul is permanent like energy, I guess it's not. I guess it's only philosophical or perhaps sophist, I guess. But what do you think?
Well, with that question, I'm going to leave it open to the audience to consider because we're out of time. But it's a great question to leave off of, so everybody can think about this. We might come back to this in the future show. Thank you so much for joining us, Mert.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. This is Centerpoint with Dr. Ron Anbar.